Blog Talk Radio.
What's up, world, and welcome to Realty Universal Radio, the fastest hour in radio, no doubt about it. I'm Randy Zachary, and this is a show about real estate, about God, about life, about giving back, about being the change in the world that you'd like to see. I'm privileged to bring to you Natalie Mullinex and Realty Universal, a company dedicated to excellence. Realty Universal is a revolution founded on a very simple principle. We believe sellers and buyers should have choices. We have been a pioneer in the menu program system. More on that, of course, a little later. Natalie Mullinex, president and founder of Realty Universal, averaged over $80 million a year in sales prior to stepping back to focus more on building Realty Universal membership network. She's an accomplished speaker, writer, consultant, trainer, and, oh, by the way, mother. She travels worldwide, literally, spreading the gospel, if you will, of Realty Universal. And now, Natalie Mullinex.
Hey, everybody. It's so wonderful to be here another week. And I'm so excited about today's show. We're going to be discussing infrastructure in the U.S. I know we have listeners outside of the U.S., but I'm sure you can appreciate it because we all around the world are driving in many places. I mean, you know, flying and driving and shipping's happening, et cetera. And so we, it's funny. Everything needs good infrastructure and ways to support it and ways to keep it up, just like your homes, just like your, you know, vehicles or everything has to be taken care of. And now our infrastructure is starting to slowly decay. We've got a lot of infrastructure that was started well over 100 years ago here in the U.S. And the plan was good. They did plan, but now we're kind of running out of money and there's other ways to take care of things. So how did you, I wonder if you know how your area rates, what's being done. So these days with the hustle, bustle, social networking, the president election here this year in the U.S., just we're all inundated. It's easy to press on and not see so much around us. And that goes for many situations as well. Look at these Pokemon, things going on now. I just can't believe what pandemonium's been created with it. And some people are loving it and some are just pulling back away from it. It's just amazing how much is being thrown at us and come up with all the time. So we don't always notice everything around us. So we're going to talk a little bit about how our infrastructure, how it does affect our lives daily here. Our highways, bridges, railways, ports, inland waterways. It's just amazing. I wonder if you know how yours rates, and we'll get into that in a second too. Who's responsible? And with our enormous debt well into the trillions, where is the money going to come from? We kind of take some of this for granted. This is Natalie Mullinex with Realty Universal Radio. You just have me today. We are not having any guests on. If anyone would like to call in, our call-in number is 347-945-5428, 347-945-5428, and you may email radio@realtyuniversal.com or post on Facebook. And we seem to have quite a lot of people that love to email and post. And we will get to your questions. We absolutely will. If not today, we will another time and always get back to you guys. So thank you for listening. And we will be right back. are back. This is Natalie Mullenix, and you're listening to Realty Universal Radio. Today we are discussing the infrastructure in here in the United States. So I guess how many people knew? I guess people, older guys probably realize how this infrastructure started and when it started, and you know, many, many moons ago we had dirt roads in the United States, and now we have wonderful highways, expressways, bridges, ports. It's a great system, and it does need help. Every family, every community, every business needs infrastructure to thrive. Infrastructure encompasses your local water main, the Hoover Dam, power lines connected to your house, and the electrical grid spanning the U.S. Everywhere you look, in front of your home, the National Highway System. Once every 4 years, and this is coming off of infrastructurereportcard.org, very, very awesome site. And you can actually look up, we're not going to have time today to go over every single area, but you can look up on all the 50 states, you can look up your area to see where you are on the report card. Every 4 years, America's civil engineers provide a comprehensive assessment of the nation's major infrastructure. And they call it the ASCE's report card for America's infrastructure. Just like in school, an A to F school report card format, it provides an assessment of the infrastructure conditions, needs, both giving grades and making recommendations for how to raise the grades. An advisory council of ASCE members assigns the grades according to the following criteria: capacity, condition, funding, future need, operation and maintenance, public safety, resilience, and innovation. Since 1998, the grades have been near failing, averaging only D's. It's pretty sad, due to the delayed maintenance and underinvestment across many, many categories. So, you know, it's they said there's $3.6 trillion is needed by 2020. We're here in August of 2016 to bring it up to par. These are, of course, based on reports, economic analysis reports, et cetera. There's, 4.12 million miles of roads, 47,000 miles in highways. We're going to dig into some more of these facts a little bit later. I always love to get into the facts and how it works, et cetera. And also, because we never have enough time on this show, I love it to give food for thought so you guys can, you know, look up your own facts too. And that's one great thing about the Internet these days. We certainly can find a lot of facts, and we have to make sure the facts are not fiction. But many aren't. So how they do, the 2013 report card grades are in. This is 2016, so I guess we'll get them next year, because every next year will be 4 years. But they got a slightly D-plus grade. That's not too good. They range from a high B-minus for solid waste to a low D-minus for inland waterways and levees. That's not too good either. I wonder how New Orleans made it. And God bless everybody right now in the Louisiana. They just have, over 40,000 people are out of homes, which is horrible. I heard a lot of places that are, where people did have flooding were not even rated as flood areas. So many, many people didn't have flood insurance. And it's very, very sad, and great to donate and try to help any way we can. It's just, that was so unpredictable. We saw what happened with the levees in New Orleans in the past, and everything needs to be up to par. But when you hear about these floods also happening in areas where it's not flood zones, based on the rains, I mean, you get 20, 30 inches of rains, you're going to have these problems. And I don't know. It's just I could go on and on with that, and it's just my prayers are out there to them. And also because there's areas where you find that the levees aren't built as well as they can be, and then they always blame that on money. So there's just got to be a better way. There's also areas that people build in that clearly the houses should be built on stilts, so to speak, high up, not right on the ground, and they still build them on the ground. So I don't understand that. But I also want to say our prayers to people in California right now. That I heard today there's over 30-some thousand people losing homes due to the fires. So there's just so much going on. And this infrastructure, let's see, I'm going back to they said the drinking water actually didn't all get high grades either. Bridges saw a lot of incremental improvements that are needed. The rail across the country jumped from a C to a C+. And, so I think the government knows this is a problem. We need to do something about it. And interesting enough, we're going to get into a little bit more of that also later. You have government bonds, and there's different funding that's available. And it's good to talk to your advisor, your money advisor, to see how you can also help with community bonds and where they're doing for using the monies for building and structures, et cetera. And you can defer your taxes or pay no tax on some of it. Some of it that you invest the monies in has a great high rate of return, and you're not having to pay taxes on that money. That's not for me to get into. That's for you to definitely talk to your financial advisor. But I do recommend that, because I bet there's a lot of people that are listening that aren't aware that there's actually mutual funds. I don't want to say mutual funds, but stocks and different investments that you can place monies in with bonds that are going to be tax free. So we can all help. We can help, and we can help ourselves at the same time. This says the infrastructure is essential to the long term growth, and it's progressing. But from state to state, it's not getting a good grade so far. So 2013, I'm just going to run through a quick list, not all the states. The energy grade was a D+, public parks and recreation a C-. Now, these are national grades over the country. Roads got a D, ports a C, bridges a C+, wastewater D, levees D-, drinking water a D. Now, of course, it isn't in every single area, but this is overall. Schools a D, transit a D, rail C+, inland waterways D-, aviation a D, solid waste B-. It's interesting, that's even higher than the hazardous waste D, dams D. Now, I would have never thought the grades were this low. Of course, A is exceptional, B is good, C is mediocre, D is poor, and F is failing. Luckily, we don't have any Fs over here. Infrastructure is the foundation that connects the nation's businesses, communities, and people, driving our economy and improving our quality of life. For the U.S. economy to be one of the most competitive in the world, we need a first-class infrastructure system. And, you know, goods and people and everything's moving constantly day to day. And we need systems that deliver reliable, low-cost power from wide range of energy sources and water systems. We really need to commit to this. It is very important. I mean, this is why I get into where we all need to vote. We all need to be involved. We need to get involved in politics, even in just knowledge, because this all affects us. When you see builders building communities, and sometimes people say, hey, I don't want another development in my community. I don't want this store going up in my community. It's really good to look at how that gives back to the community via jobs. And many, many communities, when the builders go in and want to bid out to have a project, the zoning and permit departments in the community and all these restrictions are placed in, they have to contribute to the roads, they have to contribute to the parks, they have to contribute to the infrastructure. So it's really worth it to see how it works and how it hits home to everybody and how it's actually a benefit, not a negative. So before you say, hey, I don't want this in my neighborhood, look at the big picture and really commit to digging in and getting the information. And the information's always there. You just have to ask questions and keep moving forward. I'm going to go back. Let's see. The ASCE, which is the Society of the Engineers, I was mentioning earlier, commissioned a series of economic reports called Failure to Act to provide, and they did this in 2011, an objective analysis of the economic implications for the U.S. on the current investment trends in key infrastructure sectors. In 2016, they updated a series to reflect current conditions, and the report covers 10 of 16 categories addressed by the report card. So this is getting updated. And they're talking about the cost to each family's disposable income, the impact to American jobs, added cost to U.S. businesses and the overall impact on the U.S. economy. They go over surface transportation, roads, bridges, transport. I mean, we've had a lot of that's happened. I mean, and in 2007, I-35, the bridge at I-35 in Minnesota collapsed. We had some bridges in California collapse. I mean, I'm sure there's many more than we are aware of, but it's a serious problem, and it's a serious issue that needs to be taken care of and that can be taken care of. Even though we have trillions of dollars worth of debt, there's ways to do this with infrastructure and with systems that can work. And so I'm going to go back and go through a little bit of history on where this got started and how we did it and how the U.S. did it and came up with this, which is kind of fun, I think. There was a report prepared by the National Economic Council and the President's Council of Economic Advisors in 2014. I'm going to read from some of that, and then we're going to jump over to some history and facts, too. We had the Erie Canal was built in 1807, all the way from the Erie Canal in 1807 to the Transcontinental Railroad in 1869. Those of you familiar with CSX, to the Interstate Highway System in the 1950s and 60s. They were instrumental in putting the country on a path for sustained economic growth, productivity increases, and an unrivaled market for goods and services and international competitiveness. Today, though, our transportation infrastructure is not keeping up pace with the demands or a growing need, you know, a growing economy for today or future generations. So this is where the government's working hard, really hard, to try to put everything together. Smart infrastructure it affects us so everywhere. There's over 4 million miles of roads, 600,000 bridges, and 3,000 transit providers in the U.S. alone. Federal, state, and local investment in transportation is falling as a share of the GDP. Population congestion and maintenance backlogs have increased. We lag behind many competitors overseas in our infrastructure. Let's see what it said. The World Economic Forum rankings had the U.S. in less than a decade fallen from the 7th to the 18th overall in quality of our roads. 65% of America's major roads are rated in less good condition. One in four bridges require significant repair or cannot handle today's traffic, and 45% of Americans lack access to transit. The cost of adequate infrastructure investment, oh my gosh, it's just saying we see it all around us. We spend 5.5 billion hours in traffic each year. Yikes! Costing all of us more than $120 billion in extra fuel and lost time. American, this is why I'm all about working virtually. I love it, and I think it's the way to go. As many as people can, not everybody can. American businesses pay $27 billion a year in extra freight transportation costs. There were more than 33,000 traffic fatalities last year alone, and this was written in 2014, so it had been 13. And they said roadway conditions were a cause in approximately a third of the fatalities. Now, everybody listening, don't tweet, don't text, don't do that stuff in the car anymore. And I'm one who's been on the cell phone since 1986, and I'll put an earpiece in, and I still do that, but I'm not looking away, and I'm not saying that that's the best thing to do, but no texting at all, please. So there is an act, Grow America Act, a four-year, $302 billion proposal to fund our nation's transportation system. This is in the last 4 or 5 years, and invest in our growth. The plan actually has a significant infrastructure investment gap through targeted investments and lays the groundwork for increased efficiency in the future. We actually need everybody to agree. Now, Congress needs to reauthorize funding, which some of this at today's time may have taken place. So 65% of America's roads are rated less, 25% in repair, 45% of Americans do not have access to transit. So they're trying to work on this. they are trying to work on this, and I'm going to jump back to some of the things they're doing. You know, a lot of the companies, though, have changed different ways that they're doing business. Just a few examples. A survey of Portland, Oregon business leaders in the Economic Development Research Group found that Intel moved their last shipment departure time up 2 hours for outbound shipments to avoid peak period congestion, which makes sense. I mean, none of us want to go through rush hour. Different food companies are opening up different regional distribution centers to better serve their areas. PGE estimated that it spent approximately $500,000 a year for additional travel time for its maintenance crews. You know, many times people are bottlenecked and just so many things are going. It says Nike must spend an additional $4 million per week to carry an extra 7 to 14 days of inventory to compensate for shipping delays. This goes on and on and on, which, of course, we're not going to go through all of it. But there are things. There's bonds. There's other things. There's other ways that they're putting things together. So I want to go back and look. I'm going to go back and talk a little bit about some history. And who should get some credit for that? Many, many people also. One particular one particular mention also. And I am going to take a quick break and be right back.
Real estate is still a solid investment to invest in if you are in for the long haul. It can also be one of the best investments of your capital if handled correctly. In the United States, we are fortunate to have the tax write-offs that we take for granted while owning property. To obtain the best value for your real estate, there needs to be a market of both buyers and sellers, as well as a means of bringing the two together. Now more than ever, due to the recent loan crisis, even with bringing buyers and sellers together, there needs to be a way to make the financing work if a loan is needed. There are still many options available, and we can help. Whether you're a buyer, seller, going through a short sale, investing at the top or bottom, we have trained Realty Universal members in each state and affiliates who can customize your process the way it will work best for you. We do advise that you coordinate with your accountant and real estate attorney so your plan is intact. We have all learned through this economy that planning and averting pitfalls can make a world of difference in our futures. Ultimately, you have to rely on you after consulting with the experts. We set you up to win.
We are back in Realty Universal Radio, and this is Natalie Mullinex. Back to infrastructure in the U.S., and how does your area rate, and what's being done? Since the 1950s, the Highway Trust Fund has been the primary federal source of funding for state and local surface transportation projects. Every 5 to 10 years, Congress authorized predictable levels of funding to states and later local transit agencies for road, bridge, and transit projects. Over the last quarter century, Congress has customarily taken stock on the nation's needs for transportation investment and has authorized multi-year funding increases of roughly 40% over the prior authorization to better meet the needs of our communities and economy. Past few years, though, the revenues that go into the fund haven't kept pace. And unfortunately, many times funds get cut back, projects get cut back, budgets get cut back. We've all seen that. As a result, the Department of Transportation projects the Highway Trust Fund to be insolvent by the end of this, almost already right now, I don't know. Soon afterwards, congressional authorities for the federal government will have to reimburse states and localities for spending, including roads, highways, transits, because all of this will expire. That's not good. Well, I have faith it's going to be worked out, but I tell you, it really does. It's funny, the older we get, it seems like the more, at least me, I realize how much more we need to be involved. Now, of course, if you've been in politics or your major was economics, you're going to look at this differently and say, oh, sure, I've been aware of this forever. You know, it's obvious. But I would bet you probably 80% of us out there are so busy in our days, so busy doing our own thing, taking care of our own lives, that we're not really thinking about how that infrastructure works, how when we drive to the store, or we go get gas, or how we're, when we're driving on a highway or going over the bridges, connecting to other areas, or getting things shipped in. If you're living on the islands in Hawaii, too, and all the islands, how it works. We always hear in Hawaii how things are so much more expensive because they've got to ship it in and store it. But all of this is part of our infrastructure. So on June 29, 1956, President Dwight Eisenhower, he was very instrumental in helping the infrastructure of our United States. It goes back way, way further, too, where a lot of different people, a lot of communities, a lot of different ethnic groups actually helped over the years, too, way back. On June 29, 1956, President Dwight Eisenhower signed the Federal Aid Highway Act of 1956. The bill created a 41,000-mile national system of interstate and defense highways that would, according to Eisenhower, eliminate unsafe roads, inefficient routes, traffic jams, and all the other things that got in the way of a speedy, safe transcontinental travel. At the time, highway advocates argued, in case of atomic attack on our key cities, the road net would permit quick evacuation of target areas. Whoa. For all these reasons, the 1956 law declared that the construction of elaborate expressway system was essential to the national interest. That was a huge, huge, that was huge for our country and so needed. So we just got to get the monies back and the budget back. And when you think about it, if the money can be put, like the different bond money and different monies, and they structure it, and it can be tax-free to citizens, and say you're putting, you're earning money on it. So say you have $10,000 that you would have paid in taxes that you're able to put in a bond that's going to earn interest, and maybe that $10,000 is going to be $15,000, $20,000, $30,000, $40,000. It just depends. And, of course, I'm not a financial advisor. I'm not professing to be a financial advisor. You need to talk to your financial advisor, whomever you use, or you can also, if you don't have one, you can find them on the Internet through different programs and always just double-check. But see, if there's ways that you're invested in the long haul, you're saving yourself money. And if enough people did this and did these things, in addition to what we do with the government, we can all get involved and help. And it's just, we're just not getting told about a lot of these things. So today there's over 250 million cars and trucks in the United States, almost one per person. At the end of the 19th century, by contrast, there was just one motorized vehicle on the road for every 18,000 Americans. At the same time, most of these roads were made not of asphalt or concrete, but of packed dirt on good days, or mud. Under these circumstances, driving a motor car was simply a way to get from one place to another. It was an adventure, not the easy thing that we have today. Outside cities and towns, there were almost no gas stations or even street signs, and rest stops were unheard of. Automobiling, said the Brooklyn Eagle newspaper in 1910, was the last call of the wild. Isn't that cool? The last call of the wild. And just look how far we've come. We've just amazing what we do now. So did you know that I-90 is the longest interstate highway? It connects Seattle, Washington with Boston, Massachusetts. It's at 3,020 miles. Wow. Can you imagine how long that had to take to be built? 3,000 miles stretching from Seattle, Washington on one side of the United States to Boston, Massachusetts on the other. That's wild. And one thing I'm going to go through about some other, just going to go through some other history too. And before I do that, I want to mention a couple things. You can go to infrastructurereportcard.com and you can go back and you can look at the overview of how it rates, how your state rates, and scroll down and look through the pages. You can see how you can get involved a couple different ways. Tell your legislator. Don't just assume that your legislator knows everything. They also need to know that, you know, they like to know that you're going to vote and that your voice means something. So do it. Just, you know, do that. And you can ask questions here. You can sign up for updates. You can be social. You can actually, on this site called infrastructurereportcard.org, you know, tweet, Facebook. You can get it out to your group, and please do, please do. The social networking has just been such a wonderful way to put out knowledge. I mean, there's always pros and cons in everything, right? We can be used improperly, but it can also be used with good sense, and getting these information, get this information out means a lot. I'll tell you how many people probably just never think about it because they're busy, but it isn't that hard to get out. Now, the government does have it's called a Transportation Infrastructure Finance and Innovation Act, called TIFIA. The TIFIA program offers low-cost, long-term, flexible financing that can make large, complex transportation projects more attractive to both the public and the private sector. It allows the Department of Transportation to lend at the 30-year Treasury rate, which currently is around 3%, for up to 35 years following substantial completion of an eligible transportation project. It also allows them to enter into a subordinate lien position and postpone repayment for up to 5 years after substantial completion. The flexibility of this provides a lot of cost savings to borrowers, and also it's a good catalyst that ensures that the project will be undertaken. Now, there's a minimum, okay? For the total projects, the minimum is $50 million in most areas, $25 million in rural areas, and those are eligible for these types of loans. So, you know, it's all over the place, but there is assistance. It says since its launch, the TIRA program has helped 46 projects in 18 states turn over $18 billion in TIFIA assistance into nearly $64 billion in infrastructure investments across America. The Moving Ahead for Progress in the 21st Century Act, MAP-21, transferred TIFIA, into one of the largest transportation infrastructure loan programs in history, making up to $17 billion available in credit assistance and critical infrastructure projects. The Grow America Act would make an estimate $40 billion in additional loan volume for $4 billion investment over 4 years. So when you hear about this stuff, listen up, because, you know, your votes do count, and the politicians want your votes, and the politicians are the ones who get to sign these things into law. When you look at all of it. So it's also common for state and local governments to cut back on capital projects, such as building schools, roads, and parks, in order to meet their budgets. So you definitely need the federal government involved, too, and everybody that's going through. So we're going to take a quick break, come right back, and go through the end. We are back. This is Natalie Mullinex, and you're listening to Realty Universal Radio, talking about infrastructure in the U.S. How does your area rate, and what is being done? We need it. We need it. So, we've got a nation of drivers. Okay, there's in. So you had 1910 was the last call of the wild, right? And all this was about to change. In 1908, Henry Ford introduced the Model T, a dependable, affordable car that soon found its way into many American garages. By 1927, the year that Ford stopped making this Tin Lizzie, the company had sold nearly 15 million of them. At the same time, Ford's competitors had followed its lead and begun building cars for everyday people. Automobiling was no longer an adventure or luxury. It was a necessity. Do you remember seeing those cars that, like, they cranked in the front? You ever hear people say somebody turns their crank? Well, that's what they're cranked. It's like the car is the crank, and the older generation will understand this. And, yeah, boy, have we come a long way. And we really take it for granted, though. That's the thing we shouldn't do. We should really be grateful. A nation of drivers needed good roads, but building good roads was expensive. So who would pay the bill? In most cities and towns, mass transit, streetcars, subways, elevated trains was not truly public transportation. Instead, it was usually built and operated by private companies that made enormous infrastructure investments in exchange for long-term profits. However, the automobile interests, such as car companies, tire manufacturers, gas station owners, and suburban developers, hoped to convince state and local governments that roads were public concern. That way they could get the infrastructure they needed without spending all of their money. And this happens constantly. You know, where cities and towns give the developers credit for building, and then they also get low-interest loans. So it is a win-win situation, very much a win-win situation. So their campaign was successful, and many places elected officials agreed to use taxpayer money for improvement and construction of roads. In most cases, though, before the 1956 federal government split the cost of the road building with the states. One exception was the New Deal, where federal agencies like the Public Works Administration and the Works Progress Administration put people to work building bridges and parkways. However, this funding arrangement did not get the roads built fast enough to please most of the people. So we had, because President Army General Dwight Eisenhower during World War II, he was stationed in Germany. He was so impressed by the network of high-speed roads known as the Autobahn. I'm saying Autobahn. It's a right sawed Autobahn. I'm not going to pronounce it properly, so I know it as Autobahn. Autobahn. They fly on the Autobahn. Oh, my goodness. Anyhow, he was so impressed with it that after he became president in 1953, he was determined to build the highways that lawmakers had been talking about for years. And for instance, the Federal Highway Act of 1944 had authorized construction of this. So he did it, and he did it, and it's amazing and what we have today. So my hat's off to him, and we see it now. So it took several years of wrangling, but then finally it passed in the 56. The law authorized the construction of a 41,000-mile network of interstate highways that would span the nation. It also allocated $26 billion to pay for them. $26 billion in 1956 was nothing to sneeze at. I mean, I know right now it still sounds it's a lot of money, but back then it was a huge amount of money. Under the terms of the law, the federal government would pay 90% of the cost of expressway construction. The money came from an increased gasoline tax, now 3 cents a gallon instead of two, that went into non-divertible highway trust fund. Now, you know, I don't. For all those of you, when you look at the taxes at the pump, every state has different taxes. Some state may have 50 cents, some may only have 20 cents. You can, you know, it starts making more sense when you really get into all of this. The new interstate highways were controlled access expressways with at no grade crossings. That is, they had overpasses and underpasses instead of intersections. They were at least 4 lanes wide and designed for high-speed driving. They were intended to serve several purposes. Eliminate traffic congestion, replace what one highway advocate called undesirable slum areas with pristine ribbons of concrete, made coast-to-coast transportation more efficient, and made it easy to get out of big cities in case of an atomic attack. Of course, they had to think about that, too. So, and I love when I see the road systems where you have beltways, and then you also have back roads, and then you have your highways. It's so wonderful because if you get stuck in a traffic jam, you can get off on a side road and then still get to your destination. So you're not bottlenecked and you're not stuck. That's, to me, that seems like one of the best systems I've seen personally, but who am I to say? But we have many, many, many good systems. So, lo and behold, as usual, we always see revolts, you know. One person's happy, the other one's not. And then when everybody starts getting together, usually things change. When the Interstate Highway Act was first passed, most Americans supported it. Soon, however, the unpleasant consequences of all that road building began to show. Most unpleasant was the damage the road was inflicting on the city neighborhoods in their path. They displaced people from their homes, sliced communities in half, and led to abandonment and decay in city after city. And that's where the eminent domain comes in. You know, if they're doing, the government can come in and say, hey, we need your home because we're going to widen the road here. We need your home because we're going to build this here. And they're supposed to give you fair market value, but these things do not usually make people happy. Some are very necessary, some aren't. So people began to fight back. The first victory for the anti-road forces took place in San Francisco, where in 1959, the Board of Supervisors stopped the construction of the double-decker Embarcadero Freeway. Forgive me if I botched that. Embarcadero Freeway. Along the waterfront. During the 1960s, activists in New York City, Baltimore, Washington, D.C., New Orleans, and other cities managed to prevent road builders from eviscerating their neighborhoods. As a result, numerous urban interstates ended abruptly. Activists call these the roads to nowhere. Yikes. Well, overall, you can see this whole country was built up in a very, very good way. In many cities and suburbs, however, the highways were built as planned. All told, the Interstate Highway System is more than 46,000 miles long. How cool is that? That's awesome. Very much, very, very awesome. We are almost at the end of our show. It just goes by so fast. I want to mention again, the site that's really cool to go to is the infrastructurereportcard.org, because you can look up your states, you can take action, you can get a history, look at the economic impact, you can contact people, they will respond, and get involved. You can put it up on your social networking. And, gosh, everybody, please, if you haven't voted before or you don't plan on voting, please get out and vote this election. There's a lot going on, and our country needs everybody involved. Don't think that your vote doesn't count. It does. It absolutely does matter. And you talk to people, too, and they hear what your opinion is and all of it, and people that respect you and believe in you are going to maybe you can sway them to go in the right direction as well. So that $3.6 trillion that's needed by 2020 to rebuild our infrastructure, I think they're working on it. I really do. And we can all get involved too. We can be a part of this. We don't have to sit on the sidelines or say it doesn't benefit me or it doesn't, I can't help, I have too much going on. You absolutely can. Even by just putting the awareness out here to people and doing a couple of social networking tweets and Facebook things, and they have all that right on here. They've got, there's levee safety initiatives going on. They've got, people are appreciating the value of water. There's summit talks are talking about infrastructure. Gas prices are low, so now they have the opportunity, the Congress has opportunity to fix the fund. That's interesting. It says last month's average gas price in the U.S. was the lowest since 2004. Wow, this is August 8, 2016. It said last month's was lowest in the whole U.S. since 2004. Cheap gas coupled with an improved economy is spurring Americans. So they can, and usually the summer is the busiest time. So this has worked out really, really well. Oh my gosh, it says Americans spent 6.9 billion hours sitting in traffic in 2014, 42 hours per driver. The wasted time and gas add up. The total congestion was about $960 per driver, $160 billion. Wow. And it says a major contributor is the congestion because of the underinvestment in our road network. And there's a whole bit, it's like $629 billion backlog of highway needs. For the federal government, most states, taxes on gasoline and diesel are the primary funding source for highways. But the tax rates frequently have not been raised in years, sometimes decades. Many states are considering plans to raise their fuel taxes to increase their investment in highway infrastructure. And last year, 9 states actually did it. Despite these tax increases, the price drivers pay at the pump has continued to go down, which is good. Even shows that a gas tax increase does not have direct impact on the price of the pump. I disagree with that. I mean, if you're going to have just do the math. I mean, it certainly does change unless they're getting some type of discounts in certain areas that I'm not aware of, which I'm not aware of how it works totally, but I just know when you add the tax, you do usually get a higher amount. But, hey, if we're doing it for a good cause and if that tax is going to the right places – and it's funding, then why not, right? So, see, before we jump to conclusions and think, I don't want this, I don't want that, we really need to learn how it all works and put it all together and be the agent of change. You can do it. Don't think I'm the one person can't make a change. Yes, you can. So we are already at the end of our show. And I've enjoyed talking to you guys today about this very, very important issue. So to everybody out there, I wish you peace.
Thank you for joining us on Realty Universal Radio. Our hope is that you are enlightened, encouraged, and mobilized to be an agent of change. Realty Universal is on Facebook. Join us there. Follow us also on Twitter at Realty Universal. And for more information, you can go to realtyuniversal.com. Make it a great day.